Thanks for joining us. I have with me in the studio Chris Ng, a good friend of ours and a good friend of the show. Chris is, of course, the Chief Strategy Officer of Etica Insurance and Takaful. Chris, we need to talk about Etica becoming the first insurance and Takaful provider in this country to sign the United Nations Principle for Sustainable Insurance, or PSI. Before we jump into that, maybe you can give us a little bit of background into UNPSI and what does it mean for a player like yourselves to be a signatory of this?
Sure. Thank you for having me here today. The UNEPFI, PSI, I know it's a long acronym, but basically it stands for the United Nations Environmental Programme Financial Institution Principles of Sustainable Insurance.
Okay.
Basically, it's a partnership between the UN, the United Nations, and financial institutions worldwide coming together to say we commit to sustainability. And the way we demonstrate our commitment is by becoming a signatory to this PSI framework.
It is also consistent for the Maybank Group as well, am I correct? Because Maybank has been talking about ESG commitments. Your equities research house has been doing a lot of work in ESG, even rating the companies that they cover for ESG. Is this, according to the larger scope of Maybank for that matter, an idea that ESG or sustainability is a core program, not just for Etica but for Maybank as well?
Definitely. I think the Maybank Group as a whole has been very committed to sustainability. They have signed up to this Net Zero Banking Alliance, and of which the counterpart in insurance is a Net Zero Insurance Alliance. Mm. And to sign up to that, we first have to be a signatory of the PSI.
Okay.
So it's a first step towards aligning ourselves with the broader Maybank Group when it comes to sustainability.
What about the implications or the impact of this? What does it mean to be a signatory of a UNEPPSI?
Essentially, what it calls for is for insurance companies to commit to four principles. The first one being that we need to embed ESG into our daily business activities. So whether it's looking at developing new products, where we park our money and invest it, or whether we underwrite certain clients, all that has to factor in ESG into our decision making. The second is that we need to work closely with our clients and our partners to promote sustainability, encourage others along the journey. The third is to work closely with government and regulators, of which Etica has been doing that quite closely, sitting on the number of committees that Bank Negara has set up. And the fourth is to commit to transparency. So every year, we need to put out an annual report detailing what we have done through the year, and based against our set targets, how have we achieved or moved forward on those targets.
Do you feel that this is going to create more strain in the workflow or operations back end? How do you intend to communicate this kind of a change of behavior to your internal workforce in order for you to move as one, as collective, to achieve these targets that you have signed on to?
Well, the good thing is we've been working on this since about 2018, 2019, and we've developed a framework. The framework has got four dimensions. It talks about internal and CSR, our suppliers, our investments, and our clients or underwriting. So definitely there's a little bit more work in becoming a signatory than in not becoming one. But we've gotten most of Etica's on board this journey. And the good thing is we have very agreeable clients where they too have moved on their sustainability journey.
Okay, so we need to talk about that, because would that also mean some clients would be facing higher premiums because they have to comply to certain targets or regulations or standards? Do you feel that that is a possibility as well?
At the moment, no. So what we are doing is we are discussing with our clients, and these are big clients, people like Tenaga, people like Sarawak Energy, and they have made their own sustainability commitments. So with regards to any costs that are involved, they have already decided that they will pay those costs and invest that money to become more sustainable, and we provide further advisory services. We have this thing called the EREP, which is the Etica Risk Advisory Provider, Risk Advisory Panel, where we discuss with them on certain things to minimize their risk, and that comes with ESG advisory as well. So no additional cost to the clients beyond what they have already committed in their day-to-day business.
Okay, we also need to talk about Bank Negara's value-based intermediary idea of VBI. This is an idea that Etica has publicly acknowledged and answered the call to. again, what does it mean to comply or to answer the call of Bandar Negara's VBI?
Sure, sure. That was, in fact, the genesis of where we started as an organisation on our sustainability journey. Bank Negara made that clarion call. We supported it, especially on our Takaful side. And that looks at three different areas: people, planet and prosperity. We want to do good for the people, for the planet, and to share prosperity with our partners and with our customers. So very aligned with the ESG principles, and that's how we've been able to marry the two and carry that forward over the last 4 to 5 years.
Okay, we'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more with Etika Takaful Insurance about how they intend to achieve these sustainability goals. We'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Chris Eng, Chief Strategy Officer of Etika. Let's talk about some of the details on how you are answering the sustainability initiatives. Maybe you can talk to us on some particular projects on sustainability that Etika is working on currently and how this is going to translate to that larger goal of achieving that ESG targets.
Sure, sure. I'll go back to our framework again, where we actually have projects targeted at both internal and CSR. Working together with our suppliers, our clients, and as well evaluating our investment portfolio. Now, it's been a multi-year journey, and we're happy to share with others as well the phases in that journey. The first part being creating awareness. So there was a lot of webinars and internal talks. Then we set about measuring where we are now. For example, we have committed that all our equity investments will be ESG compliant by 2025. So we first need to track and see how much of our current equity investments are actually ESG compliant. So that baseline setting has been going on for the last 12 to 18 months, both in terms of our investments as well as in our carbon footprint. Now, right now, having collected all that data, we are in the midst of setting our KPIs and our targets, and at the same time, becoming more and more outward facing. So initially, when we started, we were inward facing. Where are we? What kind of CSR we want to do? Now we're all about developing new sustainable linked products. For example, we are the first in Malaysia to provide home coverage protection for electric vehicle chargers. We were the first in Malaysia to provide online Takaful for people with disabilities. And we are among the first to also provide investment linked policies, which are supported by an ESG fund. So these are some of the policies we've worked on. We've had the benefit of working with very supportive partners like EPF, where we are one of the pilot partners for the iLindung program to provide insurance and Takaful cover for EPF members, focusing more a little bit on the B40 community.
So things like EPF's iLindung, for instance, is part of this?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, we need to also look at the announcement that was made by the Maybank Group and, of course, Etika. The group posted quite healthy earnings for 2022. Do you feel that these kind of activities actually support bottom line as well? It's not just about trying to comply with ESG, but it actually helps with the profitability of the company.
Definitely in the longer term. In the short term, there may be some costs and investments involved, but in the longer term, we believe that this is the direction to go. It's both part of our DNA, where our purpose statement is to make the world a better place, and we think with the newer generation of people out there, with the millennials, with the Gen Zs, they will be really expecting both their bank as well as their insurance company to subscribe to the sustainability principles. So it's a long-term strategy for this.
For me, as an investor, I would not necessarily care for my fund managers to invest sustainably. That's me as an investor. I don't know whether you are going to be upset with me because I said that. But some other investors are extremely adamant in trying to get to their fund managers to invest sustainably. I just want my bottom line to be strong. I want my returns to be healthy. So for instance, when Etika needs to invest only in ESG compliant companies moving forward, do you feel that that might necessarily harm the earnings or the alpha beta of the investments that you guys are getting. How do you mitigate the possibility of lower investment income arising from the need for you to comply with only investing in ESG companies?
So I've been talking about this subject since 2013. And the fact that when you look at a longer term horizon, an ESG compliant stock will tend to outperform a non-ESG compliant stock on the longer term basis. So what we tend to see is that as the bull market happens and rallies happen, they don't tend to outperform. I think what you will see is that they perform as well and no particularly better than a non-ESG compliant stock. Yeah. The catch of it is during a downturn in the market. And many studies have shown that for an ESG compliant portfolio, the drawdown on that portfolio is going to be less severe during a sell down of the market.
Which is great because over long term, that's what you want.
Yeah. So it's not just about principles. It's not just about being green. When you look at the bottom line, investing in ESG stocks makes sense.
Okay. Just to clarify, I'm not saying that I don't want my fund managers to invest sustainably. I'm just saying that if they can do so while ensuring healthy in returns, that's what I want as well. Having said that, you were mentioning about trying to understand the gap between investing sustainably by 2025 versus where you are at right now. So how much can you share with us in terms of where you guys are at in terms of investing in ESG compliant companies and how far is the gap to achieve that by 2025?
Yeah, so the main thing we've identified over about 12 months of monitoring the data is the whole data gathering process is still evolving. So what we noticed earlier on was there was a number of listed companies, and we're talking about Malaysian listed companies here, that didn't publish as much information about their green credentials or their ESG credentials. And because that information wasn't available, they were actually rated as being medium ESG risk. Now, as more information becomes available, some of them saw their risk reduce, but some of them saw their risk actually increase. So the data provider, when they get more information, they will make their judgment call. And because that whole data gathering and sharing process is still evolving, that's why we haven't set our upfront baseline yet, because we still see that numbers fluctuating. But what we can say is that when it comes to severe ESG risk, we are now down to less than 1%, and that commitment is to reach 0% by 2025.
To the folks that might be unfamiliar with the ESG practices of a financial institution like Etika, they would normally give comment that already financial institutions are high on the G aspect of ESG because of our regulators. We're not like the US, for instance, where the regulations are a bit wonky, if you ask me. And they would also make the comments that financial institutions are not necessarily involved with poor environmental practices. That is something that I normally have a conversation with my friends, and I will say that, well, not them necessarily. I don't see banks cutting down trees. I get that. But the way they consume energy is important, how they converse on their clients, especially some of the clients that might have a high impact on environment, like you mentioned just now, Sarawak Energy or any other energy partners, Tenaga, for instance, that would be a critical factor. But the key factor that ESG needs to be looked at for a financial institution is on the S element, the social element. One of them is, of course, addressing or improving financial inclusivity and insurance coverage for many Malaysians. As you normally would remind me that insurance coverage for Malaysians are extremely low compared to our peers, not just regionally, but globally as well. And of course, one item that the government is trying to do right now is called Insurance Rahmah. Do you feel that providing more coverage for the B40 community and some parts of the M40 through tools like Insurance Rahmah is a core factor in Etika trying to expound on your ESG values?
I think definitely. You know, the main thing we have been highlighting that the S component in ESG is something that doesn't get as much attention, particularly in the West. So you rightly pointed out, Ibrahim, G was the first element that was very important for all financial institutions and for the investment community. The E has come up a lot over the last couple of years, and it's the S that is still needing to gain traction. In Western countries, I think their focus has been more on diversity and inclusion, while in Asia, what we have been promoting is social inclusiveness, the raising of income levels. Now, when it comes to insurance, Rahma, of course, our CEO has been discussing with representatives of the ministry, and it's very much aligned with our purpose statement, as I mentioned, of making the world a better place. So definitely we will be evaluating and investigating how we can fully support this initiative.
Do you feel that that is a good way to increase the insurance penetration rate for Malaysians?
I think it's a way to provide protection and cover for Malaysians. You know, we wouldn't particularly look at it as a way to increase our market share.
Okay, got it. And of course, when we talk about the ideas on expounding on the S element of ESG or the social element, other than insurance, Rahma, what would be some of the ideas that you can share with us in terms of Etika trying to ensure that increasing coverage for Malaysians is done both at a sustainable manner, but you know, you're not losing money while doing it. How do you intend to do that?
Well, we certainly feel that we have a strong suite of products that cater to the B40 community. And these do not belong to our extensive CSR or CZR programs. Mm. So products such as Rumah Khairat, which is a home protection, fire protection policy that we actually distribute to rural and semi-rural communities via the village headman. So these are some of the products that we distribute targeted at B40 to increase protection among lower income households.
This is what, in Sarawak or?
Across Malaysia.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So we also have products that we distribute via post offices. So that allows us the reach into rural communities as well.
Okay. We go for one more short break. When we come back, we'll discuss with Etika on their plans on the insurance industry at large. We'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Chris Eng, the Chief Strategy Officer of Etika and Insurance. We need to talk about Takaful and Insurance, Etika Takaful Insurance. We need to talk about the insurance industry at large. It's 2023. We've seen a lot of efforts in us understanding the insurance industry per se. Some fintech companies, insurtech companies are trying their best, but I wouldn't say that there has been any breakthrough just yet. We've seen how the regulators, especially, say, for instance, the Securities Commission, have created financial sandboxes for these fintech and insurtech companies to thrive and to work their products to better serve the community. Where do you feel the future of the insurance industry is going to face? Do you feel that these kind of startups or insurtech companies can actually make a breakthrough and rival big players like yourselves in the future? Or do you feel that there still needs to be a lot of understanding on how the market works, how the consumers appreciate or understand the need for coverage? Where do you see the insurance industry outlook for Malaysia moving forward?
Well, definitely, I think the big trend among insurance companies worldwide, and increasingly so in this part of the world, is digitalization. So these fintechs and these startups in the sandboxes, they are in the right location to grow, to capture this trend. We are actually the largest online insurer in Malaysia. We have more than 50% market share. And yet, we also still see opportunities in digitalization in the online space. Now, that being said, I think we have to be cognizant of the types of insurance products there are and the ways they are sold. So for the majority of general insurance products, we think that they are easier for the customer to understand, and customer would prefer to have self-service facilities so that they can do their own comparison, they're willing to do their own purchases and even make claims online. So that digital space and where these fintechs and digital players, that's a good space for them to be in. But we think that there will always be a room for intermediaries. So when it comes to more complex life and family takaful products, some of these products would probably need the assistance of an intermediary to explain it a little bit more to potential customers. And so the way the digitalization happens for that category of products is to provide digital tools and enablers to those intermediaries, whether they are agents or they are bank staff, to be able to have more information at their fingertips. customer, understand the customer better, and then share about which product makes sense. So that's one of our core principles as well, to provide best advice to our customers. And there, our focus on digitalization is to provide data and tools to our intermediaries.
When I spoke to, with your colleague and your boss, Dato' Kamaluddin, is it Dato' yet? I don't know.
No.
He was talking about this whole idea of digitization being a core feature of Etiqa and all the other competitors that you have in the industry. But that role of intermediary or explainer, so to speak, of financial products, especially insurance and takaful products to the consumers is actually quite needed. That conversation I had with Kamaluddin was, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. It's 2023, do you feel that people are still unfamiliar with financial products, like insurance products? We've seen how people have gotten on with ETFs on with robo-advisors, White Invest and Stashaway and the likes are rolling out the products to consumers left, right and center quite easily. They don't necessarily need a financial intermediary to explain to them the kind of products. Why is it that insurance and takaful products are a little bit more different than, say, for instance, investing products?
So I guess when you talk about insurance and takaful products, there are numerous kinds. And I think when we talk about simple life products or simple medical products, the kind where, you know, they advertise you pay less than 5 ringgit a day and you get a certain medical coverage, room and board at the hospitals, I think that's fine. But some insurance products, they have various riders to be attached. So you can buy a basic life policy and then you can attach a medical rider, a critical illness rider. And I think that because people like you and me, we don't deal with this on a day-to-day basis on the products, it was always beneficial to have a very experienced intermediary to come and explain. And after they understand the needs of the customer, to explain which product would fit them best.
But vanilla products like vehicle insurance, for instance, motor insurance, that should be an easy one, right?
Yeah, that's fine. Online sales, I think that will be the way future.
Okay. And of course, looking at investing into these kind of startups, would companies like Etiqa or some of your competitors, big ones, are going to invest directly into these kind of players? Or do you feel that let them grow and if they break through, then you acquire? How's the strategy when it comes to ensuring that you get the best solutions out there from the market?
We're open. We're open to discussions. We do get a number of people coming to see us to offer potential acquisition targets. What we like to do is a holistic approach. So other than seeing whether we should acquire them, we also look at whether we should partner with them and how that business partnership works. So we have a number of digital partners already out there in the market. People like Ringgit Plus, people like Giga Cover, we have worked well with them. And in some cases, we work with them for more than one country.
Zooming out, the last 3 or 4 minutes of this conversation I want to talk with you is on the penetration rate of insurance in Malaysia. Why is it so low after so long? You've been at this for decades now. Why do you feel that Malaysian, as a society, don't normally take this as, I don't know, something of an interest or a need? Maybe you can share with us the whole idea of why this has been troubling us in that sense.
I think it's not just in Malaysia, it's across the region as well. When a lot of insurance is not made compulsory or mandatory, you really see the penetration becoming lower. So for example, while motor insurance is mandatory in Malaysia, in Singapore, it's not mandatory in Indonesia. When on the other hand, property insurance for some classes of property is mandatory in Indonesia. So you see penetration of that side, fire insurance, much higher in Indonesia as compared to some of the motor policies.
But we have MRTA and the likes, right? Mm. So that would be important.
That area is fine, but beyond the loans that you take,
You mean like fire insurance, for instance, or yes, property insurance inside the household?
Yeah. So beyond that area, then people tend to not see the value of insurance that much. I think there are two aspects to this. Firstly, insurance, but for some people, is viewed as almost like a luxury item where you need to focus first on putting food on the table, a roof over your head, and then you think about insurance. So it's not as high a priority. While the second aspect, I think, is to do with human psychology. You know, hope springs eternal from the human heart. So you're always trying to see maybe these things won't happen, trying to look at the brighter side of things. And therefore, insurance may not come at the forefront of everybody's minds. We always say that people don't just wake up in the morning and think they need to buy insurance. Typically, it's when they have seen how insurance has helped somebody when their time of need occurs, that's when the realization that everybody should have protection comes.
The human psychology must then be addressed with economic circumstances. There are a lot of players right now that are offering very low premiums with okay, I guess, coverage. Even then, the penetration rate is not as promising as initially thought. So how do you see players break through these kind of psyche, I suppose, or psychology?
I think it's still a need for awareness and education. A lot more is happening right now. I think that the ministry's effort, the recent ministry's effort to talk about insurance, Rahma, to say that, you know, insurance should be for everybody and not just for the higher income groups. That helps to create awareness that having this protection to fall back upon should anything happen. I think that is the way forward to get that acceptance and increase that penetration for insurance.
Okay, some final comments, Chris, before we conclude our conversation in terms of Etika's direction for this year moving forward, and of course the aspirations that you have after being a signatory of the UNEPPRI?
PSI.
PSI, yeah. What would be the sustainability goals moving forward?
We remain committed to our three ambitions of equity investments being ESG compliant. We also subscribe to two other goals, which are part of the broader Maybank Group's sustainability goals, improving the lives of households in Malaysia, as well as achieving carbon neutral by 2030. So for both these efforts, the first one, we have a number of suite of products, as I mentioned, our iLindong. We also provide rebates for driving less. That's our Drive Less, Save More add-on. So we'll continue to look at more products to assess and improve the lives of households. While for being carbon neutral, we are in the midst of replacing all the lights in our properties with LEDs and looking to set up our solar panels on the buildings we own.
Fantastic. That was Chris Eng, the Chief Strategy Officer of Etika Insurance and Takaful. Etika has been a good friend of the show. We've been having them for quite some time now. And you can view all our archival interviews with them over the past few years at astroawani.com. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.